Eloy needs to be destroyed. As soon as the Dweller finds us our information, we can take care of her. It has to be fast. Our powers are starting to strain. We're going to have to cross over again soon. And this time, we know that someone will be waiting for us.
I had no idea what he was talking about with his powers, so I decided to focus on the one thing I did understand. Their pact. It was pissing me off in a way I hadn't expected. I fought against being in Sirit's mind. I didn't want to see anymore. I was too mad. I wanted to wake up and kick all of their asses. I was distracted from my struggle, however, when the door slammed open, and a small figure burst into the room. It was Emmy. Cohen was at her side in an instant, and even her unflappable confidence faded under his glare.
"Did you figure out where she is?"
he asked, his voice a rumble of menace. She nodded quickly.
"Yes. Addy gained entrance to her office. He found her address in Soldel. She apparently put him for some time off and is no longer in Blesswood."
Cohen turned back on her, dismissing her in one motion.
"We need to find her now, and her companions."
Sounded like fake Willow was still on the run, too. All of them skipped out of Blesswood. They already had this little escape planned. I was afraid they were going to bail then, leaving me behind. But thankfully, they hadn't forgotten about our connection. I was sucked from Sirit's mind the moment Aeris put his hands on me. I shot up in the bed, my heart pounding as I tried to bring my mind back to itself. It was so disorienting being in someone else's mind, even just for a little while.
"You're fine, Willa,"
the seductive soul started to say. But before he could finish, I had already lunged from the bed, preparing to storm out of the room. A plan which went badly astray as my legs tangled in the bedsheets and I took a head-first dive into the floor. Or would have, at least, if Yale hadn't been there to scoop me up. I wiggled against him, wanting to stay mad, but, as always, I just couldn't. My stupid, codependent soul just wanted me to like them. That was my story, and I was not budging from it.
"You okay, Willatoy?"
Yale's moss-green eyes missed nothing as he let me stand on my own feet.
"You look flustered, even for you."
Breathing in and out, wanting to scream and yell, I decided there was no point. They had made their choices, and to some degree, I understood them. I didn't like that they had decided without me, but I understood that it wasn't exactly a conversation that we all needed to have together. And the conversation itself made sense, even if it was hurtful. We couldn't actually get involved romantically. It was impossible because there wasn't a single one of them that I preferred over the others, which would mean that, well, it would mean that I would be getting involved with all of them. It was taboo enough for a dweller to get involved with a soul in Manatzel in the first place, let alone five of them. So instead, I just pointed to the front door. "Need to use the bathroom." It was the only thing I could think of to get a moment awake to deal with what had happened. In Sirit's head, I had been mainly angry. But now that I'd had a moment to think things through a little more calmly, I'd found that I was a mix of emotions. None of which I wanted the Abkurses to know about. Thank the gods Emmy was still in the room. She stood near the door, and when I got close, she linked her arm through mine.
"She'll be fine with me," she declared over her shoulder to the five souls, all of whom were closing in on us.
She looked a little bit confused. Cohen shook his head just once, and I knew that there was going to be a fight.
"We can protect her, Dweller."
He had that look again, the murder one.
"She needs us."
I was one click away from rushing outside and slamming the door in their faces. But even though he declared it in that way, he was still right. I couldn't separate myself from them. "I can pee alone, guys. You can wait right outside." Cohen opened the door and stepped out.
"Come on,"
he said bluntly, striding down the hall in the direction of the bathing chamber. Emmy and I hurried after him, my best friend whispering to me as we went.
"We aren't allowed to use their bathing chambers, Willa. We'll get in trouble. They'll send us back to our village."
I snorted, and she shook her head, realizing what she'd been saying.
"Right. No one is taking you from the Abkurses."
Her voice got even lower.
"They're a little scary, Will. Are you sure?"
Her words were cut off by Cohen swinging to the right and opening the door to the bathing chamber. He disappeared inside, and by the time we reached the entrance, he was striding back out.
"All clear. I'll be right here."
He glanced down at me, a frown on his face.
"Shout out if you need help. Don't be a hero, Dweller baby."
I narrowed my eyes until they were surely no more than slits, and tried my best to mentally shout out every ounce of my annoyance at him. He shocked the hell out of me by slightly tipping his head back and laughing. A deep, rocking laughter that sent shockwaves of a strong emotion through me. He was beautiful. Perfect. Just like his brothers. And they didn't want me. A lot of anger fled then, because I was used to accepting this sort of disappointment. It wasn't their fault. They had done far more for me than anyone else ever had. I should have known, and I should have seen it coming. I needed to be okay with it. I was okay with it. I forced a smile across my face. It was almost a real one. I'll be right out, one. You don't have to worry about me. There was not a trace of laughter on his face, and when he said in a low voice, "If only it were that simple," he straightened into his full height of giant and gestured to the timepiece around his neck.
"You have 3 clicks before I come in there after you."
"I might be peeing," I said in pretend horror. Cohen nudged me into the room.
"I'll take my chances. 3 clicks.
I knew he wouldn't let us keep the door closed. But luckily, there was a second door past the sinks, which meant that I wasn't actually being watched in the bathroom. Emmy went into the stall next to mine, and both of us had a whispered conversation while we peed.
"Tell me everything that happened while I slept," I said quickly. "The boys got you to spy for them?"
Her reply came back without hesitation.
"How did you..." "Never mind. Yeah, they weren't really taking no for an answer, and they seemed to be dealing with something else. It was pretty easy for Addie to get access to her room. He cleans for the Dweller Committee."
She paused for a brief moment, and I could sense her building up to ask me something big. Finally, she whispered, her voice really muffled on the other side of the wall.
"You're going to leave Blesswood again. Will you come back this time?"
My heart ached a little at the sadness seeping from her. Our lives were being wrenched apart, and there was nothing much that could be done to change that.
"I'll always come back for you, Emmy. You're my sister."
Normally, this would be the point where we hugged, but being separated by a wall, we just finished up our business before busting out of the stalls. Emmy's eyes were slightly red-rimmed and misty, but she cleared her throat and changed the subject as we washed our hands.
"So, do you like Eris? I mean, you did kiss him. I don't think the others are going to let you choose, though. They seem to like the dynamic they have going on, and souls aren't allowed to get involved with dwellers, so an illegal lover would really mess up that dynamic."
I flinched, the memory of their little pact coming back to me, as pain once again slammed into my chest. It felt a little like when our mental link was stretched too thin, and my heart was shredding through my ribs.
"Well..."
Emmy knew me too well. She could read the sadness.
"What happened? What did they do to you?"
I had to tell someone, so I spared a quick glance toward the door. I hadn't even realized that Cohen had closed it until then. I leaned in close and whispered,
"They made a pact not to want me."
They didn't want me. In hurried words, I told her everything I'd heard during my time in Sirit's head. My best friend listened closely, one hip notched against the sink, her expression remaining calm. I knew our time before someone barged in on us was running out, so I did my best to stay on point. When I finished up, her calm expression had morphed into something else. It was a look Emmy wore a lot, one I had seen a million times growing up, the one which said she knew something that everyone else didn't. Since Emmy was a genius, it had happened far too often over the past dozen life cycles. When she didn't speak, I growled at her.
"What? Just tell me."
She straightened, taking both of my hands into hers.
"Well, you have this terrible habit of thinking and expecting the worst from everyone. Like, you push them away before they can do it to you. I mean, how many friends have you had over the last 18 life cycles, besides me? And I think the only reason you ever kicked me out of your life was that I literally had nowhere else to go, and you eventually had to get used to me."
"That's not true," I burst out. "I love you." Emmy chuckled.
"You love me now, but don't you remember when my mom first died and I moved in with you? You shoved rocks under my side of the bed on the floor for weeks, not to mention that sleeper incident."
She was still smiling, and I couldn't help but return it. "Yeah, okay. I was pretty sure that the moment you moved in, my mom was going to realize what a terrible, clumsy child I was, and that it would be so much nicer just to have you as a daughter." Emmy surprised me by pulling me into a hard hug.
"I knew, and I understood. I was determined to break through that wall you kept around yourself, and it took me forever, but once I did..."
Her eyes were definitely misty now.
"When you let me in, Willa, it was beautiful.
You're the best friend I could ever imagine having, and my life is so much richer with you in it. Before you, there was no laughter in my life. There was no goodness.
Now I was the one with a thick throat and misty eyes. I swallowed a few times before I managed to speak.
I thought you were going to steal my family from me, but instead, you became the only true family I've ever had.
And as much as I've enjoyed our heartfelt moment, I would be a liar if I said I understood what the point of this last conversation has been.
She threw back her head and laughed, the tinkling sound filling the bathroom.
Will, please, never change.
Yeah, that was never going to happen. I had tried. Most of my teachers had tried. It was impossible. I was stuck with my personality, with every negative thing the gods had cursed me with, and none of it was going anywhere. I was going to have to be me for the rest of my life.
And my point was,
Emmy interrupted my mostly useless train of thought.
You act like the Abcurses are so far above you, that you could offer them nothing and therefore you're not surprised that they don't want you. Any one of them would be lucky to have someone like you, Will. And whatever pact they make, I don't think it was about you not being good enough. There's something bigger going on here. Something about them we don't know.
Before I could push her further, or ask about this mystery she thought the Abcurses were hiding, a banging on the door outside had us both jumping.
"Come on, Dweller," Cohen shouted. "It's time to go."
Emmy stopped me before I could leave, whispering in my ear.
"They don't look at you like you're nothing. They're going out now to take on Elowyn because she hurt you. They care. Maybe try to let them in."
I closed my eyes briefly, fighting down the memories, before I opened them again and smiled sadly. The problem is, I already have let them in. They were more in than anyone else had ever been, even Emmy. They all literally held a piece of my soul in their hands, and it scared me on a primal level that I had never experienced before. Chapter 17. Apparently, we hadn't moved from the bathroom fast enough, because the door slammed open, and Cohen was suddenly filling the space. His eyes were extra bright as they bore into me, before his gaze dropped slowly to run over me.
"Are you okay, Dweller baby?"
Those low, gravelly words grazed across my skin, igniting it as though my whole body was straining in anticipation of the pleasure pain that his touch could bring. Emmy nudged me in the back, and when I glimpsed her from my peripherals, she was grinning like a crazy person. I turned to glare at her more fully, and she mouthed, "Told you," before turning to make her way from the room. Cohen moved aside to let her free, and then there was more than just his giant form filling the area. Sirit, Yale, Roman, Eris pushed aside, each of them taking a moment to inspect me for injury. I decided right then not to worry so much about their pact. For now, this worked for us, whatever this was, and I wasn't going to ruin it by thinking too hard about it. They were my kindred souls, the rebels, the rule breakers, the guys who gave the middle finger to the gods the same way I had my whole life. They were the friends I had been born to find, and I wasn't going to let my annoying feelings push them away. "So," I said, smiling at the Abcurses. Eyes narrowed, brows furrowed, and suspicion crept into their features. I let out a huff. "What? It's not like I never smile. I was hoping one of you could fill me in on the plan." Yale shook his head, before reaching forward and dropping a stack of clothes at my feet.
"We'll explain on the way. Put some proper clothes on. This isn't the time for your usual penchant for nudity, and those clothes look off, like you tried to mop a floor in them."
That would have been the bucket of dirty soap water that had been poured all over me. Wait, say what now? I so did not have a penchant for nudity. It just happened to me. The rest of the asshole brothers were grinning at Yale.
"She so does have a penchant for nudity," the look seemed to say.
How dare they unwittingly counter my thoughts? I was so riled, I whipped my shirt up over my head and tossed it across the room without any hesitation whatsoever. My bra was next, as I flicked it free. Shorts and underwear following soon after. Well, kind of. I got them to my ankles, and then as I tried to kick them free, I tripped over backwards, clipping the edge of one of the sinks and landing flat on my face. My shriek would have been loud and piercing if it hadn't been muffled by the shirt I'd landed on, the one I'd just flung off my body. Like a stubborn idiot with a penchant for nudity. I really needed to think things through more often. There was a beat of dead silence before one of them groaned. Eris's words were far less smooth than usual.
I'm out, guys.
The sound of steps and then a door shutting followed. I knew I should roll over and get back to my feet, but now that I'd managed to make a fool of myself for the 100th time in front of them, I really didn't want to move. My ass was showing, but nothing else, which seemed like something I could deal with. Something warm draped over my body, and I lifted my head to find Sirit crouched right beside me.
I thank the gods every single sun cycle that you tripped into our lives, soldier.
His smile was so bright, like he was on the verge of laughing.
But you really need to get dressed now, otherwise Chaos might get his wish.
He stood, and was almost out of the room when he turned back and said,
Move that perfect ass. You have one click, or I'll be back to dress you myself.
He was gone then, and the room felt so empty without the minute. I pulled myself up from the bathroom floor, praying to the gods, except Raoul. That asshole was getting no prayer from me. That the floor in there was cleaned by a super dweller like Emmy or Addie, and not a lazy face-planning dweller like me. Stumbling across to the pile of clothes left by the Abcurses, I found clean sets of everything I usually wore. Underwear, dark-fitted pants, and a simple black shirt. My boots were sitting a little further away. I pulled them on when I dressed. I pushed the door open to find the Abcurses lined up and ready to get out of there. I caught Cohen's eye, since he was standing closer than the others. His gaze dropped from my face for a moment, settling on my chest, and then flicking lower, before he quickly pulled his head up and stormed off down the hall. He really needed to stop looking at me like that. I was kind of regretting the nudity now, because my legs were a little too weak. It wasn't good to have weak legs right before a kick-ass mission. Not that I had any experience with kick-ass missions, but I assumed. Let's do this, I announced, filled to the brim with a confidence that didn't really make sense, since I had no idea what we were actually doing. I knew that we were going to hunt down Elowyn, and that she was going to wish she'd never messed with me on account of the 5 badass souls apparently hell-bent on defending any threat to their pack, a pack that I was now a part of. But that was where my knowledge reached a bit of a hurdle, because I didn't know how we were going to get to our revenge, and I didn't even know if it would be possible. The boys weren't normal, but they weren't gods, and Elowyn was older than them. Older, with more experience, and enough of a brain to get herself out of Blesswood, just in case. Maybe she was trying to draw them out. Maybe they also presented a threat to her natural order of things. Maybe she was pissed at them for dragging me out of my place and standing above the dwellers, for excusing me from the duties that she had given me, and refusing to accept the repercussions of their actions. Maybe. Shit. Maybe this was her revenge plan.
Her who?
Yale asked, as the others spun around and strode off. He must have been assigned Willa duty. Elowyn, I said, hurrying to catch up with the others. What if this was her plan all along, to draw you guys out of Blesswood, to get revenge on you for upsetting the hierarchy here at the Academy?
What, and ambush us with a couple of souls?
Rome shot over his shoulder, flashing me a rare grin. He clearly found the concept amusing, so I shut up about it. Could you guys maybe stop hearing my thoughts? I asked, only just realizing that Yale had questioned something that I'd said to myself. It's bad enough that you've all seen me naked, and that you're keeping the poor pieces of my soul prisoner. Do you really need to butt into my private conversations, too?
Firstly, it's your own fault for talking to yourself so much,
Sirit countered, as we hurried through the abandoned hallways.
Normal people aren't constantly speaking to themselves like they're actually expecting an answer. Not that you should change it. It's damn entertaining.
I scoffed, choosing to ignore him. The anxiety was beginning to claw into me, as the streaks of dawn sunlight began to flicker through the windows. I had felt some safety in the darkness, but now I was afraid that the world was waking up, or more specifically, that the gods were waking up.
And secondly,
Eris added, glancing over his shoulder at me before following Rome up the staircase ahead, jumping 4 steps at a time without even a puff in his breath.
We aren't keeping your poor soul prisoner. It's keeping us prisoner.
Yale fit his hands around my waist, pulling me off my feet as he jumped up the stairs after Eris, setting me down again at the top. Cohen and Rome were pulling ahead again, since I was holding the other 3 up, but they paused at the archway leading outside, waiting for us to catch up to them.
And thirdly,
Yale pushed low on my spine, encouraging me to move faster,
It's not like we tied you down and ripped all your clothes off. You chose to be naked. It's your thing. You have something against clothes.
I do not, I countered, falling to a stop and holding up my hand to catch onto Cullen's shirt so that he wouldn't immediately go bounding off again like the most annoyingly agile giant in all of Manatsal. And you might as well have tied me down and ripped my clothes off. You should have stopped me. I'm not the responsible, intelligent super soul around here. I make bad decisions. I'm a dweller. We have flawed minds like that.
What the hell are you four talking about?
Cullen groused, gripping my wrist and untangling his shirt from my fingers.
Can't remember,
Sirit said, completely deadpan.
My mind is stuck on that last visual.
Packed,
Rum grunted, flinging out an arm and punching Sirit right in the stomach. Packed, I thought derisively. Now I was angry again, because they'd reminded me of this stupid thing, and because they were talking about it right in front of me, even though I wasn't supposed to know a thing about it. It made me wonder how many other things they spoke about right in front of me, assuming that I was too dumb to understand. Which, actually, would have been pretty accurate, because I hadn't picked up on any other hidden meanings yet. I realized that they were all staring at me then, and I squared my shoulders, yanking my wrist out of Cohen's grasp and striding right past them. He grabbed the back of my shirt as I swung my leg out, ready to take another defiant step, and I glanced down at the staircase. A staircase I definitely would have tripped down, because I hadn't noticed that there was yet another one right there in front of me. Why the hell is there a staircase going down? I muttered, like it was the staircase's fault that I'd almost fallen down it. We just climbed up, and now immediately we're going down again? This academy makes no sense. This is a stupid academy. You'd think with how blessed it is and how all the best and most sacred souls come here, and what with the gods visiting and everything.
Can I kiss her just to shut her up?
Rome grumbled, brushing past me. Nobody answered him, which was good, because I would have been forced to punch them in the face to defend my honor, if honor was a thing that I had. I would have punched Rome for saying it in the first place, but I didn't want a broken hand. It was bad luck to break your hand before a kick-ass mission. See? I was learning so much already.
Come on, Rox.
Yeo recaptured the wrists that I had freed from Cohen. His tone somber, as though he had taken Rome's question as a threat of some kind. Evidently still on Willa duty, Yeo pulled me down the stairs, and we were running again, except faster this time. Rome led us to a small cobbled pathway, which wound a crooked path along the side of the academy, eventually leading us to the very front, to the courtyard where I had first encountered Cohen and Sirit. The memory seemed odd. I couldn't quite piece together the version of me who had dropped to the ground a mere click before a bolt would have pierced her chest, with the version of me that was now running alongside the five arrogant souls who had become, somehow, the most important people in the world to me. Not that Emmy wasn't important. Emmy was family. But those ad curses, they were the missing piece. It was like coming home. I wouldn't call them family, the way Emmy was family. But I belonged to them, and they belonged to me. It was that simple. We were the six shades of weird, all stitched into the same cloth, and without even one of us, the whole thing would unravel. But I still had to file away a reminder in the back of my mind that it ended there, as per their preference. We weren't ever going to be anything more. Not that it would even be possible. Not with one of me and five of them. And I was thinking about this again, why? We passed through the courtyard and started down the long line of steps that led back down to the water. I almost expected the giant floating platform to come and take us away, but instead, Cohen turned off to the side, following a wooden boardwalk that edged the water. "We're not taking the platform?" I called out. Sirit, a few steps in front of me, snorted.
"The barge? No, they saved that for dwellers in Bolson."
"Wow. Ouch. Wait, how are we getting across the water, then?"
"Train,"
Eris answered, pointing in front of us, his arm raised almost to the line of the horizon. I glanced up, taking in the tall, thin bridge that stepped all the way over the water and then seemed to go on and on, even over the land. I had no idea what a train was, but if that was a train, then I would have actually preferred the Bolson barge. I could see gaps in the steel, like it had no proper space to walk across the bridge. Only steel rods and steel bars and steel bolts. The gaps were massive, almost too big to jump over. I'd always thought the souls were a little too obsessed with showing off their bravery for the gods, but this was something else entirely. That can't be safe, I muttered, just loud enough that the ab curses might hear me. I didn't want to be the wimpy one of the group, but I felt like it needed to be said.
Just you wait, Eris promised,
his lips curling into a smile that immediately sent my mind spinning. He's talking about the train, I had to remind myself. His golden eyes momentarily darkened, since he had clearly heard that last thought, and I colored, quickly turning my head away and pretending the moment never happened. The others didn't react, so it was relatively easy. As we walked along the boardwalk, I worked on trying to muffle my inner dialogue. It had proven impossible to stop the thoughts before they formed, so I needed a new technique. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I visualized the numbers, counting them over and over again. It was something that Emmy used to make me do when I woke up from a nightmare. She'd say, count backwards from 5, Will, and take a deep breath with each number. By the time you get to 1, everything will be okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 5, 4, 3, 2. The soul in front of me had stopped walking, and I smacked into him, bouncing backwards. I didn't go far, though, because Yale had been walking right behind me. I blinked my eyes up, rubbing my face. Rome turned around, staring down at me. The others had stopped, and they were similarly staring. What? I demanded, looking back down at myself. I was still clothed.
You were calling out to us, Eris supplied.
I waved a hand in the air. Just counting. Proceed. They didn't proceed, probably because I was ordering them to and they never had taken orders from a dweller before. Whatever. I started walking on my own, heading toward the big steel train. Someone fell into step beside me. I didn't glance over, but then the back of my shirt pulled tight across my chest, and my forward motion halted. 4 of the ab curses passed me, which left 1 behind me, holding me back.
5, I grumbled.
Sirit chuckled, releasing my shirt, and we started walking again, this time at the back of the group.
It's not that we don't like watching you walk in front of us, soldier, especially now that we can visualize you without clothing, but you have no idea where you're going.
I was about to open my mouth and declare that there was only one possible direction to walk in, when Cohen suddenly changed direction, splitting from the main boardwalk and beginning to climb a steep set of stairs that seemed to lead to the steel train. I shut my mouth then and followed. Halfway up, I started panting, which was actually pretty surprising since I tackled almost 5 flights of the rickety wooden stairs that stepped up the side of the mountain. The higher we climbed, the faster I fatigued.
Is the air harder to breathe up here?
I huffed out, not caring who answered.
Yes,
was the reply shot back from what sounded like all 5 of them.
Well, okay then.
Finally, I could see the end of the staircase approaching, and I dragged myself up the last few steps on hands and knees, collapsing onto the platform. My face felt hot and flushed, and my breathing was ragged, and my hair was falling in messy curls around my bent head. This was it. The place where I finally met my end. Luckily, I seemed to have a penchant for nudity, because I was about to become a Jeffrey. Heavy black boots stepped into my line of sight, and I was picked up and placed on my feet by Rome.
You're not going to die. Just give your body a few clicks to adjust to the altitude.
My wheezing did seem to be improving slightly, the stabbing pains in my lungs abating.
Why did they build this damn thing so freaking high if the air's so bad up here?
Rome nudged me forward, pushing me toward his brothers who were nearby, standing on some wooden planks beside a huge metal beast.
Holy God, monsters! What the hell was it? Was this the train? Because it looked like a metal monster and I was pretty certain that it was staring at me. I was pretty certain that it wanted to eat me. I was pretty certain, once again, that I was about to die.
Rome shocked some of the fear out of me when he answered my previous question.
They built that train platform closer to the gods, Willa. Everyone wants to be closer to the gods.
I still wouldn't take my eyes from the train monster, but I did manage to murmur back.
Someone should tell those idiot gods to live at the end of a dingy cave.
Sirit, who was close enough to hear that, laughed.
That was just the dingy back entrance. The other one is much nicer. Of course, Very few will ever get to see that.
I definitely wouldn't. That was for sure. Unless, of course, they rolled out the welcome wagon for the Jeffreys, lured them all in with a false sense of shiny awesomeness, and then, once they got them inside, it was all about the mind-washing, shaved heads, and degrading, ugly skin clothes.
You know they aren't all called Jeffrey, right?
Yale had apparently picked up on pieces of my inner chatter, and was once again amusing himself with what he had heard.
Last time we were there, there was definitely a Bob and a Linda helping out.
Sandy and Mitchie, too, if I remember correctly,
Eris added. Seriously? Now this was something that was going to steal my full attention. How is it that you five know so much about Topia? Like, you even know the names of the servers. They had far too much knowledge for a bunch of rebels who occasionally broke through the dingy back entrance into Topia. Yale shook his head at me, that damn amused smile still on his lips.
We have friends in Topia. We know how to cultivate relationships, all of which will keep you safe, Willatoy.
Blah, blah. Sounded like a whole lot of deflection, which was something that worked very well on me. Deflection and distraction. Which happened then as the train monster let out a loud whooshing sound, and steam suddenly filled the air above us. And I was back to staring at the beast. It looked like a massive metal fur line, one of those fuzzy, cylindrical-shaped bugs, with way too many creepy little legs. The train monster had too many legs, too, but they were more like hollow metal wheels, hooking over the metal tracks that ran along the base of the bridge. Its body was hairless, too, the shape long and bulbous, with carts scattered back along the path which led out over the water and into the distance.
Come on, soldier.
Sirit placed his hand on the small of my back, pushing me toward the door, which was now open, on the second carriage.
Time for a little trip into Soldel.
My breath caught in my throat, and I wondered if the air had gotten even thinner all of a sudden. There were three small steps leading up to the door, and I couldn't stop thinking about what I was going to find inside. This is not natural. I tried to backtrack, but Sirit wouldn't let me move an inch. Like, how does it move? Why is no one driving it like the carts? Why are no Bolson pulling it like the carts? Can't we just take the damn carts? Arms wrapped around me, and before I got a single answer to my very important questions, I was hauled up and into the dark interior. My shriek was stuck in my throat, but that didn't stop my panicked hands from clawing at whichever soul held me.
Pain will get you nowhere with me, Dweller.
Cohen's low, growly voice was enough to have my hands calming. My body calm, too. In fact, I felt downright calm as he strode with me down the cart, dropping me into one of the chairs which spanned along each side of the carriage. Yale smirked at me as I sat down, indicating that my sudden calmness had much more to do with his sneaky persuasion than my own adaptability. A huge window stretched along the wall beside me, and I was gifted with an absolutely jaw-dropping view of the valley below. And wow, Blesswood was huge! Despite having been there for a few dozen sun cycles now, I'd had no idea that it was this size. I certainly had not explored even a small percentage of it. But I have been to Topia, so I was officially the most well-traveled dweller in the world. Unless you counted the Jeffreys. Warmth settled into the seat beside me, and I turned to find Rome. His huge body was blocking out the sight of his brothers, but somehow I knew they were sitting in the seats in front and behind me.
Thanks, soul stealers.
I turned back to the view, pressing my hands to the glass.
Is this what the gods see every sun cycle?
My words were low. Husky. For a click, I let myself bathe in the beauty which was right before me. Rome leaned in closer, his head resting close to mine, as he followed my line of sight.
The gods rarely look beyond their own noses. Souls are the same, always striving to become gods. That's all either of them see. It's always the dwellers who stop and appreciate the beauty. The gifts. Why do you think that is?
I swiveled in my chair so that I could see him better. Rome pulled back a little, the intensity of his eyes dazzling.
What are you, Dweller? What makes you see the world the way you do?
I found myself shaking my head, blinking a few times. I don't know. I guess when this is the best you can hope for, you appreciate it. Gods have Topia. Souls have the hope of Topia. And Dwellers, we just have the Natzel. This is the best for us. That was such an Emmy answer. She would totally be so proud of me right now. Rome didn't say anything more, but I could tell my words had struck something within him. He seemed thoughtful, his brows furrowed, and his eyes searching mine. I jumped as the train let out another loud whooshing noise, and with a jolt, we started to move. I settled back into my seat. Rome did the same, and we both kept our heads turned toward the view. The valleys gave way to massive expanses of water, the same water we had crossed in the barges, but this time, I got to really see the vastness. It formed a huge circle around Blesswood. The early morning rays of sun highlighted colors across the surface, shifting from the deepest cobalt blue to the lightest of turquoises.
I want to learn how to swim.
The demand burst out of me before I could think about it. Yale's head appeared above the seat in front of me.
Is this another excuse for you to take your clothes off?
I glared, narrowing my eyes as far as I could while still being able to see him. No, I will be learning to swim fully clothed. I love clothes. I'm never taking my clothes off again. Sirrett's mutters drifted up then. He must have been sitting beside Yale.
That's really disappointing, soldier.
Crossing my arms, I dismissed them all and focused on my water. Unlike the ab curses, I was going to claim that beauty. It was worth claiming. Chapter 18. The train ride was close to the most awesome thing that I had ever done in my life, sitting just behind my first view of Topia. Topia was more beautiful, but it also had asshole gods and Jeffreys, neither of which were comfortable to be around. On the train, it was just me and the ab curses, and a view which drifted from one beauty to the next. The metal beast climbed up the cliff with the multitude of waterfalls across the plains of Blesswood's territory, and then into the rolling hills of Soldel. A crowd of souls and dwellers were on the platform when we emerged. Sirrett, Yale, and Cohen went out first, and I was next, followed by Roman Eris. The souls appeared to be waiting for the train. I suppose that it would continue on to Davadel and Tridel after leaving Soldel. The dwellers were there to load bags and to clean the station. I knew this because that's exactly what the few dwellers present were doing. Of course, there was no time to stop and chat. We had ass-kicking to do, and souls to get revenge on. The usual for a sun cycle with the ab curses. They moved as a single unit of zero fucks given through the crowd. They didn't get out of the way for anyone. Actually, they didn't even have to attempt to avoid anyone, since souls and dwellers alike moved for them. They were striding quickly and with purpose. Two things that would have tripped me up if it hadn't been for the fact that I was wedged right in the center between Eris and Yale, both of whom had a hand on me, half carrying me. We moved off the train platform, which I now noticed was located right on the side of the Minotaur's training facility, the shiny, extra-perfect building I remembered from my journey with Emmy. We didn't go inside, but past the wide-open double doors, and I could see enough to know its interior was not quite as fancy as some of Blesswood's Academy buildings, though it came close. Definitely designed by the same souls. No time to think about that, though. We were out in the streets now, walking the same path I had driven in the Bolson cart with Jareth. I hadn't seen that dweller on a power trip for a while. I wondered where he'd gotten to. Roman Sirrett had taken point now. I knew that because they told me, and since I had no idea what point was, I just nodded and smiled. Seriously, was there a damn name for everything people did? Anyway, apparently point people went in the lead and ran the risk of being taken out by angry Elowins. The points veered off the path, and we all followed a few steps later. We now walked between small hut-style homes, and interspersed were some of those larger houses with gates and fences. I still had no idea what they were trying to keep in, or out. Either way, this was a fancy part of town, even in the already fancy Soldel. Sirrett held up a hand, and everyone knew that signal. Except for me, that was. When point people hold up a hand, you stop. I, on the other hand, did not stop, and ended up crashing right into a pole. Where the hell did that come from? As I rubbed my face, Eris lifted me up and into his arms.
Quiet,
he murmured into my ear, before he moved with his brothers backwards, right into the shadow of a huge house.
Minotaurs on patrol,
the seduction-gifted soul added, before wrapping a hand around my mouth. Come on, I wasn't going to talk. Probably not, anyways. His chest moved in a silent laugh, his arm wrapping around me a little tighter. I rested against him, allowing the calmness of his closeness to soothe my rough edges. I seemed to be more rough than smooth right now, and any comfort was good. I finally picked up the sound of the patrol, a good 5 clicks after the ab curses. I was totally built for this world of stealth. I was a little surprised that they were hiding, though. That didn't seem like their style. Cohen answered that question once the 5 guards were passed, and we were moving again.
"We don't want Elowin to be warned of our approach," he said,
his voice brittle.
"She'll run again, and I'm not in the mood to track her down."
Yeah, me either. No mood for that. Sirit was back in his position of point, and from there he cut a straight path to the entrance of a Skyreacher. Holy crap, Emmy was going to lose her mind when she heard about this.
"Don't let it collapse on me," I pleaded,
my voice a little high as we walked through the door. Or stalked, more accurately. We were all badass again, stalking and shit. Elowin was going down. I would be the 6th in line to take a shot at her. No need to go first. Point had already been claimed. We approached a large polished cage, and I found myself distracted by the dweller who was standing beside it, his hand resting on a huge wooden pulley. I was staring at him because he was by far the biggest dweller that I had ever seen. He had muscles upon muscles, and height to go with it. I might have even mistaken him for a soul, except that other than his size, he was typically plain-looking. His clothes were dull and modest, and he was staring back at me, I realized. I glanced down at myself, at the clothes that were far too fancy for a dweller, even though they were simple and dark-toned. The material was still soul quality, meaning that the boys had robbed some poor girl who was around my height and stature, or else the clothes were another manifestation of trickery's magic. Which was actually a little weird, because that meant that he had designed my underwear. Actually, it was weird in either scenario, because the alternative was that I was wearing some other girl's underwear. Muscle Dweller was still staring at me. His mouth popped open a little bit. It must have been obvious that I was a dweller. It was probably the wild curls that hadn't been brushed in a few sun cycles, and the way that I barely even topped the triplet shoulders, even though they were shorter than the twins.
"Eyes on the wheel, Dweller,"
Cohen snapped to Muscle Dweller, herding us into the cage.
"And eyes on us, Willa,"
Sirit added. He sounded serious, which was a new tone for him. I gave him a surprised look, but he only met my eyes stubbornly, challenging me to argue with him. Well, I wasn't going to argue with him before, but he challenged me, damn it. I opened my mouth, ready to shoot off some retort, but the cage chose that moment to lurch, and I tumbled sideways into Rome. He looked down at me, planting a hand on my shoulder to keep me steady, as the cage began to rise. I tried not to squeal, but some kind of a sound must have escaped me, because one of the crazy souls stuffed into the cage with me laughed.
"She's never been into a cage before,"
Yale noted, sounding amused. "I've been in plenty of cages," I returned, huddling into Rome so that I didn't accidentally fall out of the cage, even though I probably wouldn't fit through the bars. I got stuffed into a cage by my mother that time a visitor came over to talk to her in private. And Teacher Fern used to lock me in a cage every time we had physical fitness classes. She wasn't allowed to actually ban me from the class since attendance was mandatory, so she just put me in a cage in the middle of the back field, and all the other kids ran laps around me.
"You're getting off track again, Rox," Cohen interrupted.
"Right." I shook my head. "Point is, I've just never been in a moving cage, because cages aren't supposed to move."
"It's how you get to the higher rooms,"
Rome's voice grumbled through his chest, vibrating against my cheek. And I turned my face up a little to look at him. His hand slipped from my shoulder to the middle of my back, pressing me closer for a moment, before his gem-like eyes flicked away. "So, what's the plan?" I asked. "Are we going to wait outside her home for her to leave, and then what?"
"We don't wait. We break in, and then we kill her,"
Cohen informed me stoically. "What?" I managed, choking over the word. "I thought you were just saying that, like being dramatic and stuff." Cohen spun as the cage groaned to a stop, his intense eyes glittering down at me.
"I'm never dramatic and stuff," he said,
grabbing the front of my shirt and hauling me out of the cage. We ended up in a hallway, with several numbered doors spaced out right to the end. They were like the dorm rooms back at the academy. Cohen took the lead, dropping my shirt to grab my hand instead, and we stopped in front of number 113. He dropped my hand, and I knew that he was moments away from kicking the door down like a crazy deranged soul, so I quickly raised my fist and knocked. They all turned to stare at me, looking like I'd just stolen their favorite toy and ripped its head off. What? I asked defensively. Just trying to be polite.
We're here to kill her,
Sirrett reminded me, his voice a frustrated groan. I don't see why we can't kill her politely, I muttered back. And, I mean, don't really see why we have to kill her at all. The door swung open then, and Elowen's shocked eyes took us in for a moment before she tried to slam the door back in our faces. Cohen pounced forward, knocking the door fully open, and, as a result, knocking Elowen to the ground as well. I hurried in after Cohen, the others at my back. I wasn't so excited about the kick-ass mission anymore. I didn't really want to murder anybody, even if they had locked me in a magical dungeon with the intention of eventually getting rid of me. Guys, I started, a little hesitantly, scrambling to Elowen's side and trying to help her up. I never got to finish my request, however, because Elowen seized me, dragging me upright as she stood, and a flash of silver was the only warning I got before there was a dagger at my throat. The five Abcurses froze, staring at the knife. I could have sworn that they even stopped breathing. Elowen laughed.
That's right. Good boys. You don't want me to kill your little toy now, do you?
Yale started forward immediately. I guessed it was only okay when he called me a toy, and not anyone else. I tried to suck in as little air as possible, not wanting to push my throat out against the blade, but it didn't seem to be working. Either that or Elowen was beginning to apply pressure. I winced, feeling the break in my skin, and Yeo paused, his chest heaving with the heavy motion of his breathing.
Nobody fucking move,
Eris instructed quietly, as if even the sudden sound of his voice would convince Elowen to cut me deeper.
Yes, nobody move,
Elowen parroted, skipping over the swear like a complete knife-welding snob. I could feel the dribble of blood that was creeping down my neck, catching on the material of my shirt. Yet another shirt ruined. Not that it was important right now. I wondered if Elowen would actually kill me. It didn't seem likely, but the tighter she pressed the knife to my skin, the more the likeliness grew, and the higher the panic clawed up through me. Until Yale spoke.
Elowen!
It was just one word, delivered so precisely, so calmly, but it dropped right over my head and knocked me out a little bit. Suddenly, everything was okay. The panic evaporated, the world slowed down around me, and the pain of the blade against my neck eased.
Release the dweller,
Yale suggested, his tone almost conversational. I blinked, trying to figure out why the pleasant suggestion sounded off. I was suddenly sure that Yale and Elowen were close friends, and that we'd all come over for a friendly visit. The insistent thought was pushing into my mind, warring with the fact that she was holding a knife to my throat. That didn't seem like a thing you did on casual visits with your friends. Elowen seemed to come to the same conclusion, because the knife drew further away.
I'm so sorry, she muttered, releasing me.
I stumbled forward a step, and all hell broke loose. Rome grabbed me, lifting me into the air and tossing me to the side. I yelped, sure that I was about to land flat on my face, but hands plucked me from the air easily, catching me against a hard chest. I looked up at Eris, completely disoriented, because it seemed that we were suddenly on the other side of the room, and I couldn't figure out how we had gotten there so quickly. I wiggled and twisted, trying to see the others, and Eris set me on my feet again, though his hands came down on my shoulders, anchoring me back against him so that I couldn't actually go anywhere. I fought off the lingering dizziness in my brain, focusing on the other four Abcurses as they surrounded Elowen in an angry circle.
Good girl,
Yale cooed in approval. Even though Elowen had to be about twice his age, and the look on his face was more, I want to crush you into pieces than I approve of your actions. Still, he said it so persuasively, it was difficult to resolve his expression with the words that came out of his mouth. He reached down, taking the knife out of her hand.
Now, why don't you tell us why you took our dweller and tried to mess with us? Hmm? She doesn't belong here.
Elowen was back to panicking, even though she hadn't tried to keep her knife. She actually wasn't moving at all. Her arms were hanging limply by her sides, and she was staring up at Yale with a pleading expression, trying to appeal to him as though he would understand her.
She's just a dweller. She can't change all the rules for her and expect everyone to be fine with it.
The rules are there for a reason.
Yale exchanged a look with the others, and Sirik grinned, taking a small step toward Elowin so that her attention flicked directly to him.
What's the reason?
He asked, conversationally.
It is how the gods wish it, she spat back,
regaining some of her fire now that her eyes weren't locked on Yale.
You'll all be punished for going against them.
It's true, Cohen agreed, grabbing Elowin by the shoulders and spinning her around to face him. The gods do like their punishments.
I knew that he was about to kill her. I could see it in his eyes. He had death eyes again. I really needed to learn to step back and stop defending people who only wanted to hurt me, but I couldn't seem to help myself. I shouted Cohen's name in my head, and his attention wavered, his eyes seeking me out in the corner of the room. As soon as he was distracted, Elowin screamed something that sounded like a cry for help before erupting into flames.
Holy crap! I screamed unnecessarily, pointing right at her. The lady's on fire!
The other ad curses took a step back, but it definitely wasn't a big enough step to avoid getting killed if Elowin decided to give one of them a hug.
That's her gift, I guess.
Eris's hands tightened on my shoulders.
And stop distracting them. You'll end up getting someone hurt.
Elowin lunged for the knife in Yale's hand, but he pulled it out of the way, sidestepping her. There was a laugh in his eyes. Actually, they all looked amused. Seriously? Did nothing ever frighten them? The door burst open before Elowin could lunge again, and a group of people spilled inside, along with a billowing rush of red smoke. For some reason, it reminded me of Ra'u, of the scarlet red cloak that he had worn on both occasions that he had appeared before me. Eris shoved me behind his back, basically squashing me between him and the wall, and I saw Boots move in front of us, turning to face the rest of the room. I couldn't see much else because of the smoke, but I recognized Rome's massive feet. Someone screamed, a woman. It didn't exactly sound like Elowin, but it was hard to tell. Things started crashing around, and I could see that Elowin's fire was starting to catch onto things. The flames were licking up the fabric that covered her windows, adding to the smoke that already choked the room.
I need to get Willa out of here,
Eris muttered, as one of the guys grunted, and a body flew into the wall right beside us, collapsing the plaster.
Ra'u is blocking the exit, Rome spat back. Turns out Elowin wasn't smart enough to come up with this plan all on her own.
Ra'u? Again?
So, we'll knock him the fuck out of the way, Eris countered,
grabbing my arm and dragging me across the room. I tripped over a lank leg, which had been dangling half across the floor, courtesy of the body sticking out of the wall. But Rome caught my other arm, and they carried me between them the rest of the way to the door. I caught sight of the dark-haired soul who had impersonated me back at the academy. She and three other souls were fighting against Cohen, who seemed to be playing with them more than actually fighting them. But Fakie was holding a candlestick, and it looked like she might actually manage to hit him. So I untangled myself from Eris and Rome, running over to her and yanking the thing out of her hand before she could use it. She spun, her eyes narrowing, and I knew that she was about to get her revenge for all the times I had punched her. Or, she would have if Rome hadn't grabbed me again, dragging me back to the front door. He pushed me through in front of him, and Eris kept an arm outstretched in front of me, like I might attempt to run off and attack Ra'u all on my own. Which actually wasn't a bad idea. I mean, I had a candlestick, and Fakie made it look super easy to use as a weapon. I could totally take point on this. And let's not forget that I had stabbed a god before. That practically made me an expert in godfighting. Ra'u manifested before us, standing against the opposite hallway, his oily black hair stuck to his square-shaped skull, his muddy red-brown eyes trained on me. He looked happy to see me. He even released that horrible high-pitched laugh that I was starting to think was actually the worst sound in the world. It was more like a giggle. The giggle of a maniac. I dropped the candlestick. I was so retired from godfighting.
Hello again, dweller.
He pushed back his scarlet cloak, revealing the red robe beneath. He was probably even wearing red underwear. Not that I really needed to picture his underwear.
What? You're ignoring us now?
Eris drawled, managing to sound offended, even though I knew he wasn't. Rome slammed the door behind him, closing out the smoke and the fire and the battle within.
It made me nervous, because I was almost certain that the boys weren't fireproof. I mean, they were gifted, but they weren't invincible.
Your father forbade me from speaking to you,
Raoul replied, his eyes still focused on me.
This little girl, however, nobody gives a shit about you, do they? It's beautiful, really. It wasn't what I had planned. I left as soon as the curse hit you, so I didn't realize that you had lived through it. I'm so sorry, little dweller. If I had known that you would survive it, I would have stayed.
Say what now? I stuttered, as the door burst open behind us. Cohen and Yale stood there, covered in soot and blood, chests heaving.
We've got a situation,
Cohen announced, completely ignoring Raoul. Or not completely ignoring Raoul, because Raoul wasn't standing there anymore. He had disappeared. The red smoke had disappeared with him. Elowin's home was now utterly silent. Raoul had taken away the chaos with him.
What is it?
Rome asked, looking over Cohen's shoulder. I actually had the better vantage point, because I could peer through the small gap between Cohen and Yale's torsos. It was a gap just barely big enough for me to glimpse Sirit, crumpled up on the ground. Five! I pushed Cohen out of the way, stumbling back into the room. The floor was blackened and grimy, and there were bodies strewn everywhere. I only made it a few steps before my feet were flying out from under me. But this time, I was flying forward and none of the guys could catch me in time, so I landed on my face. I crawled the rest of the way to Sirit, reaching him by the time the others had already surrounded him. There were tears streaming down my face, and I didn't even know what was wrong yet. I pushed between two of the big legs standing around Sirit until I was crouched over him. There was a knife sticking out of his chest, right on the left side. Some mother-effing effer stabbed him in the heart! I was caught in an intense wave of fury, and an equally intense pull of terror. Would he survive this? He was a soul! He had to survive this. Five? I grabbed his face, trying to get him to open his eyes. His skin was still warm, but there was so much blood. I could feel it now, warm against my knees, soaking up into my pants.
Please, please open your eyes.
He grimaced, his eyelids flickering, and his hand rose, catching mine.
Calm down, soldier. I'm going to be fine.
He choked as he spoke, and a spot of blood landed right on the side of his mouth. The terror fighting my rage won, and I started shuddering, my bones veritably knocking together with the thought that I could lose him.
There's a knife in your chest, you idiot!
I realized that screaming at him probably wasn't going to help the situation, but I couldn't seem to control myself. He laughed. He actually laughed. And someone grabbed me off the floor, raising me up. I fought against them, but Yale stepped in front of me, his hands cupping my face.
Calm,
he muttered, his moss-green eyes flinching, as though he didn't like using his power on me. It swept through me with the force of a gentle breeze, wiping out my emotion and leaving me hollow. The soul holding me, Eris, bundled me tighter into his arms. And I only watched as Cohen bent over Sirit, blocking his chest from view. Sirit groaned in pain, and a moment later, Cohen flicked the blood-covered knife aside.
We need to get him back to Topia,
Cohen declared, holding his hand beneath Sirit's arms, while Rome picked up his legs.
You need to get him to a healer, I countered calmly.
It felt strange, seeing the soul bleeding and limp in his brother's arms. As though I should have been doing something about it. As though it should have been tearing me up inside, or driving me halfway to insane with fear. I could feel the pings of emotion, barely sparking up inside me before hitting a barrier and fizzling into nothing.
He's going to be fine, Willa.
Eris spoke, while carrying me out of the room, away from the mess that we'd all left inside. I caught a glimpse of Elowin's face before we made it clear of the doorway. Her head was bent at an awkward angle, her legs twisted beneath her. It looked almost accidental, as though she had tripped while falling backwards, and hit her head on something. But maybe I was just fooling myself. Maybe I was just trying to convince myself that this had all been an accident. Another product of my clumsy curse. Chapter 19. The trip back to the train was a dizzy dream. My emotions were still frozen, courtesy of Yale. He had to top up the persuasion every so often, because occasionally the panic would burst through and I would start bawling like a baby. Something which seemed to cause a lot of brow creasing in the Abkurs brothers.